Welcome to the Personal Injury Marketing Minute, where we quickly cover the hot topics in the legal marketing world. I'm your host, Lindsay Busfield. When you decided to become a personal injury lawyer, you knew what went along with it. Long hours, complex decision-making, and being constantly surrounded by people struggling every day to get their lives back. That is just part of the territory. But just because you were aware of it doesn't mean that there aren't physical and emotional consequences to living this lifestyle. In fact, roughly half of all attorneys and 78% of all legal professionals experience burnout at some point. Rob Levine of Rob Levine Legal Solutions and Rob Levine Law joins us today to discuss lawyer burnout, what we can do about it, and how to avoid it going forward. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Lindsay. I appreciate it.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and about your practice and about Rob Levine Legal Solutions.
Sure. So I have a very non-typical journey to becoming a lawyer. When I was 16, I became an EMT and started volunteering on a rescue squad. And then I became a military police officer. And then I went to college for criminal justice. And then I became a police officer. And the city that I was a police officer in, or the state, I should say, in Rhode Island at the time, paid for your bachelor's, master's, and law degree. And they went to repeal the law degree rule, and you had to be either enrolled or accepted by a certain date. And so I thought to myself, free law degree, I would be crazy not to apply. I already had my bachelor's. And my ultimate goal was to be a Fed. So I either wanted to do FBI or DEA, something like that. So having the law enforcement experience plus a law degree would have really cinched the deal. And so I applied, I got into law school. And in my last year of law school, I got into a really bad car accident while I was working as a police officer. So I was in therapy for a year, two herniated discs in my back. And the doctor basically said, you know, you could try surgery, you have a 50% chance of recovery, or you can retire. And so I thought, 50% chance, there's no way you're opening me. I'm not having surgery. And this was a long time ago, 20 plus years ago. So today I might take the risk. Back surgery is a much greater chance of success than it was then. And so I retired and then finished law school, took the bar, and the rest is history.
Wow, that is a very different avenue into law. Usually we hear about personal injury attorneys getting in from being on the defense side of it and coming in, but I love hearing a new, different story. So it sounds like you have been kind of involved in a very busy lifestyle with a lot of, I mean, complex emotional and physical demands already, even before stepping into life as an attorney.
Oh, long before. So along the way, I also became a paramedic. So as a police officer and a paramedic, I can tell you the emotional toll and physical demands, in my opinion, are way more stressful than being a lawyer.
I would imagine so. But still, that doesn't negate everything that you're
negate it.
as an attorney and a business owner, and you've got a couple of really thriving operations. But when it comes to professions that have that emotional or physical toll, there is a lot of burnout that comes along with that just inherently, because you are being overwhelmed by these things that are taxing your body and your mental health. And there is so little room for you to be able to break away from that and really separate yourself from that and just go sit on a couch and be completely immersed in something other than what is going on with the other, you know, 16 hours of your life. So let's jump into our discussion on burnout. So when we are talking about burnout, what exactly, in your words, are we talking about?
So, you know, burnout can be either physical, it can be emotional, can be your mental status at any given time. It could be just lack of energy, tired. It could be your brain's just not functioning 100% and you're just tired of what you're doing, right? You don't like what you do. There's lots of lawyers who just don't like going to work. And there's people who end up in an area of law that just never liked it to begin with. It just, they got into this one role, they learned that role, and by the time they decide this isn't really for me, they're already gotten multiple raises, they're making decent money, and they think, oh, to switch, I have to start over and go back to being a rookie, working 80 hours a week for somebody and getting paid minimal, and they don't do it. And so then they're miserable their entire career. So, burnout comes in a lot of different faces, I think.
It does. And that's a really great point. And it's a great reason that a lot of attorneys do kind of get stuck and stagnate and stay with something that they don't necessarily love to do. And I think in my experience in working with attorneys, all of these factors kind of play together. But this is a really unique area, one because people can get stuck and kind of feel trapped by the monetary pressures and the fear of having to start all over again. But what are some of the other unique pressures of personal injury law specifically that contribute to burnout just from day in and day out of attorney life?
So you have to remember that the population that the personal injury attorney is dealing with, right? So you have clients who have been involved in catastrophic injuries. And along with that, they have all sorts of comorbidities, so different types of illnesses and problems, not to mention people who have regular life problems like everybody else. They have drinking problems, drug problems, they have family issues, they're in the middle of a divorce. And their stress, right, gets end up absorbed by the lawyer because your client is calling you. And obviously, we have a duty to communicate with the client, return the call, and see what's going on. And lots of people just want to bitch and complain. And where's my money? What do you mean your money? You're still treating. You just had an accident. Like you haven't even finished treating yet. And so how come my car's not fixed? Well, you just got in an accident 3 days ago, right? We haven't even got the insurance company to accept liability yet. So people, they only look at it from their perspective, which is fine. I understand they're the client and it's our job to take care of them, but they kind of forget all of the other factors that are involved, and that puts a lot of stress on lawyers. And when you have a thriving practice and you have lots of clients, and there's not enough time to make everybody happy. And the reality is, I think people forget you can't make everybody happy. And one of the things that I learned early on, right, riding on a rescue, is you can't make somebody else's emergency yours. Like, if this person's not going to go home at the end of the call, it's not because I did something wrong. It's not what I'm taking home. It's something horrible happened to them, and I did the best I could to make a difference and either save them or improve their outcome. But in the practice of law, it's the same thing, right? So no matter what catastrophic injury they suffered and what's happening in their life, the lawyer has to remember, I can't take it home with me, right? I can't personalize it. They're angry. They're not really angry at me. They're just angry at the world because everything that's happening in their life has made their outcome today horrible. But I'm doing the best I can to improve it.
Right. And they're angry at the situation. And beyond that, they're angry at a situation that they don't even understand. They understand that they were in an accident. They understand that they were injured. They understand that they need treatment, but they don't necessarily understand the process. And so telling somebody to be patient with a process that they have never been experienced with is a lot like trying to tell a toddler to be patient while you finish making dinner. You can't make the noodles boil any faster. And the same thing goes with law. You can't force an insurance company to accept liability any faster than they're going to. You can't move up a court date if it goes into litigation. You can't move this process along, and you can't change the rules just because one person is having a tough time making ends meet. And they just can't necessarily comprehend that because they don't have the skills to. They haven't been in this situation before. So you're dealing with a lot of emotional angst and anger and the pain that they're already feeling just by being in this situation. And there's not a lot that you as an attorney can do to make that any easier on them, but you are the ear and you are the point of contact for this situation as a whole. So naturally that's going to come and sit on you. But you're right. You have to learn how to compartmentalize this because you cannot take this home with you. You cannot personalize it. And so, but clearly people do. And so, if you do allow this to eat you alive, what's going to happen?
Yeah, letting it eat you alive is definitely not the okay answer because that just turns into a really bad outcome. But before I answer that, just to respond to what you were saying, I think the key for the attorney, and this is what we certainly teach all of our lawyers, is that knowledge is power. And that the more you inform the client, the more you educate the client, the more you get them to understand what the expectations are, and not necessarily only the end expectation, but here are all the phases of your case. And this is what's going to happen as you go through each phase. And so notifying them when those phases are changing and letting them know what's coming. So we use a texting system. So we've recorded a gazillion videos. And as the client's case moves, we're automatically sending them texts with videos and explaining what's happening, what's moving in the next phase, what to expect. And we let our attorneys or recommend to our attorneys to give out their cell phone number, which is something I did since day one. Because if the client believes that, okay, they really know what they're doing, they've explained to me the entire process, and they're telling me that they're always accessible and I have my cell phone, but just use it only in case of an emergency, it gives the client that sense of comfort. So they're not going to drive you nuts. One, because knowledge is power and you told them what to expect and you deliver on it. And two, they know if they need to reach you, they can 24/7. They tend not to call. That's for me was when I used to answer, when I did everything, right? So I don't really talk to clients very often anymore. But back in the day, when I was answering the phone, doing the work, speaking to the adjuster, I gave out my cell phone all the time. And the number of calls that I got were far reduced than I have some attorneys who refuse to give out their cell phone and they get way more calls.
Well, and it's funny that you say that. And I love that you have this focus on communication of the process. And it reminds me of something completely unrelated to law, but very prominent in my life, which is Domino's Pizza, where
Ha
early on in Domino's development, they would get people calling them all the time, going, "Where's my pizza? Where's my pizza? Why is it taking so long?" And so Domino's, maybe 15 years ago, responded with the Domino's Pizza Tracker. And so you can see step by step where they are in the process, that they've received your order, they're preparing it, that it's coming out of the oven, and then it's going out for delivery. And since they implemented this, it gives the customer a sense of control and knowledge. And so all of their calls completely dropped off because people knew what to expect. And the same is true when it comes to the legal profession. If you can clearly explain, here is what the process is, here where we are, here's where we are within the process specific to you. And at this point, I'm going to give you a call and let you know that we're transitioning into the next phase, then it can take that fear away from away from your clients, and it takes that burden off of you because you're not getting inundated with calls all the time. So I love that you bring that up and set me up to talk about pizza. And now I'm hungry.
I used to deliver Domino's pizza when I was in college.
Did you really? That's
And that
funny.
was before the tracker. That was when you had the 30-minute guarantee or your pizza was free.
Gotcha.
So there were so many lawsuits from that. They got rid of the 30-minute guarantee and went to the tracker.
And went to the tracker, and it has worked so well ever since. And I mean, I've got a couple of little kids that are always like, "When's the pizza going to be here?" Well, let me tell
Yep.
you exactly when that's going to happen. So
Right.
the more communication you can put in at the front end, the more you can take off of your plate, and the more stress you can start to eliminate from your life. And I think that's a really great technique that attorneys can implement that will yield real results. And so let's dive into the burnout itself a little bit more, because I think
Sure.
it's important to focus on what the risks are if you're not addressing burnout, because it can impact so much of your life personally, but also in how you're able to handle your existing cases and grow your practice. So can we talk about how burnout can really have a negative impact on those things?
Sure. So way back in a different life, I was a substance abuse counselor and a detox. So I would say that the worst case scenario of severe burnout is people end up with addictions. And so they either drink too much or they turn to drugs and they just don't know how to cope. So they self-medicate. And for people, self-medication is obviously often drinking. Like lawyers use it as, a great way to socialize and get together with friends, which is perfectly fine. But when the stress becomes too much and you start to use the alcohol in order to think you're releasing that stress and a way to cope, right? Then that's going to be the bad side of the slope, which is a slippery slope and it goes fast. So less severe issues with burnout is obviously you find yourself burning the candle at both ends. So I can't get my work done in enough hours. So I'm going to go to bed a little later, get up a little earlier. Then you can't sleep well. Then you end up taking sleep medication. And all of the things that could happen to anyone in everyday life becomes compounded when you are taking burnout and combining it with clients who are putting stress and pressure, and you have to hit a deadline, have to deliver something to the judge, have to explain to a client why things didn't turn out as they were supposed to, which all just compounds the effect and speeds it up even that much faster. So yeah, burnout can take its face, right, in any form. It's really what that person uses to cope with what they're feeling and how the burnout's affecting them.
Absolutely. And I mean, those are some very real issues that arise out of this burnout that can have long-lasting impacts. So, I mean, if you are turning to alcohol, if you're turning to drugs, like that's only going to make the problem worse long term because you're going to see that in your relationships at home. You're going to see that in the quality of work that you're producing. You're going to see that in whether or not clients are trusting you or they're satisfied with you and are willing to give you a referral to a friend for a new case. So when you are making a short taking shortcuts and just putting band-aids over the burnout, you're not actually fixing the problem. You're making it worse.
100%.
And so, what are some of the early symptoms of burnout so that if an attorney is, starting to head towards this, they can say, here's a point where I really need to check myself and start to do something about it.
So I think if we look chronologically, it's the first warning stage is you get up in the morning and your feet hit the floor and you're starting your day and you think to yourself, oh my God, I don't want to go to work today. Not another day. I don't want to deal with another client. More problems. If you're already dreading going to work before you get there, as your day's starting, there's something wrong. I mean, I work a lot of hours. I have a lot of clients. I have a lot of team members. We're constantly expanding and growing, but I love what I do. So I don't feel burnt because I'm passionate about it. If I got to the point where I thought to myself, oh, I just don't want to be doing this anymore, then it's time to adjust, right? I'm taking too much on, too many hours. So I would say that's going to be the first indicator, warning light, right? If you're not happy, there's something wrong and you need to change it because we all deserve to be happy.
Yes, absolutely. We only get one shot at this life. You may as well enjoy it and find whatever it is that you're passionate about and spend your time doing that.
Right. So then next, you're in the office and you're starting to talk to clients, and you're either snapping at your clients or you're snapping at your team members. If you don't want to talk to people as you're walking in your office and you make a beeline for your door because you don't want to talk to anyone that works for you, that's a problem. Unless that's your normal personality, I suppose, which you should be adjusting anyway from the perspective of good culture. If you snap at your clients, that's obviously not okay, right? They hired you and they entrust you to take care of them. You got to treat them with dignity and respect. If you're drinking on your lunch break, and I don't mean just like, some people go out and have a glass of wine with their lunch, but if they're drinking in excess on their lunch break, or they keep a bottle in their drawer at work, any of those signs of self-medicating during the day, I would say are definite signs of burnout. And if you're just working too many hours, like, you're not going home for dinner and seeing your family, and you're working until 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night, and you do that repeatedly. Well, sure, if you're a trial lawyer and you're on trial, that happens. But if that's your life in and out every day, that's going to burn you out for sure. I mean, there's only so many hours in a day, and you can't only work.
Right, absolutely, because that's going to have a ripple effect on everybody around you, whether it's your family or the other people on your team and your clients, of course. It's going to impact everything that you touch if you are, have a sense of negativity about you and you aren't able to give the best version of your passionate self to whatever it is that you're doing. And so, let's say a listener is, hearing some of these symptoms, starting to see that in themselves. What can they do now? What actionable step can they do now to help stop the bleed, help stop the burnout?
So, first of all, every bar association in the country has different health wellness programs. So, you can reach out to the bar and ask for contacts and help. If you don't want help from that kind of an association, obviously you can call a therapist, right? And talk about ways to manage stress, ways to manage anxiety, things like that. You can reduce your workload is an easy, obvious one, right? Hire people, right? Bring in people to help you. There is easily ways to figure out based on exactly what kind of personal injury law you do with whether it's pre-lit or lit, what the metrics should be and how many cases you should be handling and what's reasonable and what's just overload and how many cases your case manager should have, how many cases your lawyer should have, right? Based on different values of the cases. There's a million ways to slice it. But the bottom line is bring in help or reduce your caseload, but you got to do something and recognize the change. But the first is to recognize it. Like people bury their head in the sand, they don't pay attention to the signs and they wait until it's too late and they're just completely stressed out, which means now they're either having problems at home and you look at the divorce rate for lawyers, it's through the roof. So you got to address it before it gets ugly.
That's so true. And I mean, addressing it early on is critically important because the longer that you let it go, the bigger step you have to take in order to address the impact. If you address it early on and say, oh, I need to start taking more regular breaks, I need to cut back my caseload, I need to cut back the hours that I'm spending, that is one adjustment. And it might feel huge at the time, but it's a lot easier to manage that adjustment than to have to manage, alcoholism, or have to manage a spouse who now wants to have get a divorce because they're not seeing you, or family strains with your kids, or any of these issues that are created out of that snowball effect. So addressing this early on is imperative before it starts to have that ripple effect on the rest of your life. But even if you have gotten to that point in your life where your wife is ready to leave, your kids' relationship is strained, your clients aren't happy, and you're not happy, I want to make sure that we're echoing that, absolutely still take action, go find help, go talk to that therapist now before it becomes even bigger. And so I think that that's, a great asset. So thank you for the reminder that the bar associations have help available for those who need it. And let's talk a little bit about corporate culture and what we can do inside of our law firms and our companies to help our employees avoid burnout, and create a corporate culture that sees this as valuable and important.
Right, that's a great point because we've really been talking about more from the individual perspective as opposed to looking at the workflow in the office and how it affects other people. And so culture is important, right? So, I mean, I present a lot around the country, and often when I'm talking on different topics, like let's say change management or culture, and I ask right from the start basic questions, how many law firms here have a mission statement, value statement? And it's rare. There's lots of law firms that they have no mission, no vision, no values. And so what I remind them is that part of the hiring process and part of the onboarding process, and then making sure that that person's a great fit is that you decide what you stand for and believe in. And so, if your goal is not to burn out your employees, right, that you have values that you want the firm to live by, then you have to have people who follow your values and then you have to live and breathe them. So, there should be a number of hours that you expect lawyers to work, right? So, the whole theory that oh, I'm going to hire a new lawyer and I'm going to make him work 80, 90 hours a week. I think that's less and less we see that, but that's just not okay. Somebody can't work that many hours and be healthy. So, there should be a cap. This is what the expectation is, and it should be shared. And we share it at our law firm, depending on what position you're in, what role you're in. This is the expectation. If you have find yourself having to work more than those hours to keep up with your work, then you need to communicate that to your team lead, your manager, whoever you're reporting to, so that we can discuss, right? Maybe your workload is out of control. Maybe you have a bunch of big cases that's taking more time than we anticipated. So it's really just about communication, right? Is the key to be able to, for both sides to be able to freely feel like they can share with each other and be open and transparency. So if you're hiding in the closet and not coming out and talking about what the issues are, then nobody knows.
Right. And nobody knows it can't be fixed. And when somebody is feeling burnout because they think that they are expected to work too much, or they're expected to put on in all of these hours, they are probably not alone. And knowing that, and well, not just knowing that, but creating a channel of communication and a corporate culture of communication will really enable your employees to, voice, okay, to management, here is where I'm realistically capped. Here's where a standard employee is realistically capped. And the big problem that I see with a lot of organizations is if you are not creating a corporate culture that supports realistic expectations of your employees, you're going to have a lot of turnover. And from a business perspective, it is so much more expensive to backfill these positions and find good people to fill these positions than it is to invest in your existing employees, make sure that they are taken care of, appreciated in the ways that they need to be appreciated, and then not overworked. So I think that what you have been saying about creating that dynamic is so important.
Right. And the cost, right? Law firms often don't recognize the cost of the turnover, right? Whether it's an attorney or a case manager, isn't just the rehiring and retraining, which is expensive. It's the referral piece, right? So the biggest value to a law firm is obviously its clients. And so repeat clients, right, are what makes the bank, right? So we don't have to pay for advertising dollars. They come in and there's no overhead. So when you have turnover, it creates a really bad image in that client's mind, even if it's their case manager. So I do consulting to different law firms, and when we look at what the average number of case managers that someone has over the life of their case, and you some law firms are at three, I've seen four. Like those clients are never going to come back. They're never going to say anything good about the law firm. And lots of them end up leaving because we obviously look at the percentage of lost clients, we'll say. So not because you dropped it because there was no insurance, but literally the client said, I'm taking my file and going somewhere else. So a transfer. And so the higher that number is, you're losing whatever your average fee is, 10,000, 20, 50,000 a case. For every one person that leaves, let's just say it's 10 grand ahead, you lose $10,000. So if even you only lost one person a month, it's $120,000 a year. That's a huge number for a small firm.
That's absolutely a huge number, and one that can be easily avoided by having the right systems in place, by having the right values in place, and to really make sure that you are paying attention to the needs of your employees, both from an appreciation side, but as well as from an avoiding burnout piece. So, if you were to give one last piece of advice either to an attorney who is starting to feel the pressures of burnout or to an attorney who is wanting to build that corporate culture that is invested in sustainability of their employees, what would you say?
So I would start with probably the right culture so that number one, you have a team that feels supported, is capable of having open, honest, transparent communication so they can share issues with you and not just to prevent burnout, but for everything to improve and grow the office. You can't scale if your team isn't talking to you. And then obviously, if you recognize that you have team members that look like they're approaching burnout, which there's lots of systems that you can put in place to manage, right, your team members and see how they're performing and watch when there's a dip. And then you have to talk to that client, that employee, and say, hey, this is something I'm noticing. What's going on? And talk to them about it and then help them correct it. And then when you missed the dip and now you're into burnout, whether it's yourself or a team member, then the key is just to get help. Right, you have to be open about it. You've recognized it. Now you got to do something about it. So make a change, right? So don't let it get to the point where you're drinking, where it's affecting your family, there's divorce, because then it's just painful, right? Those are painful experiences. You want to address it before you get there.
And I think that in either case, whether it's, a corporate culture or in the individual, the first piece is awareness. So as you listen to this podcast, check in with yourself and, try to figure out, am I feeling that lag? Am I feeling that bit of burnout? Have a conversation with the right people and make sure that you are addressing it before it gets to a point where it's going to have larger ramifications later on. Well, thank you so much, Rob. I really enjoyed having you on the show, talking about this that is so important and I think so relatable to the attorney community as a whole. And I am hoping that it fosters some really great conversations and some corporate culture moving forward.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.